Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I don't know if anyone's standing, but if they are, sit down. Otherwise, counsel, I think we only hear from counsel for appellant JDT. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And are you Mr. Franzese?
Yes, ma'am.
Great. Okay. So you will have 15 minutes for your argument. There's no rebuttal since you won't have anyone arguing on the other side. So when you're ready, please again just state your name and the party you represent for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Matthew Franzese. I'm the attorney for Jessica Tabor, who is one of the appellant in this matter, who is the mother of the minor children at issue in this case. This case involves three issues. The first issue, which was kind of the last issue that I had argued in my brief, which is whether or not a filing of a voluntary termination of parental rights supplants or supersedes the involuntary termination of a parental rights petition that had been filed by a county. Also, I'm asking the court to look at the issue of whether or not the district court abused its discretion in finding the basis for a termination of an involuntary termination of parental rights instead of a voluntary termination based upon an improper consideration. And then generally speaking, the whole case law in this area seems to be very confusing because of it gives a court an arbitrary basis for determining whether the voluntary terminate or involuntarily terminate. So let me start at the last issue first. And part of this is kind of a weird situation. I know that going to be arguing about a case that I did not cite in my brief because I presume the county would be filing something in opposition and I would respond to it in my respondent's brief. I know that Judge Smith and Judge Hoot, and you guys were involved in a unpublished decision of In Re the Welfare of NER in 2018, which is the only case that I've seen in the court in the Minnesota case law that takes apart the argument that when a parent in files a petition to voluntarily terminate parental rights, that does not supplant the involuntary termination petition that the county has filed. And I know the court in that case argued or held in its opinion that it's basically the court, we're looking at the In Re Welfare of WLP from, I think it's 2004, and in that case, the Court of Appeals had said that there was a published opinion, said that there are two ways that a parent can convert an involuntary transfer, that was dealing with a custody case, but to convert an involuntary petition to a voluntary petition, and that's one, by filing a new petition, or two, formally amending the original petition to cite a voluntary termination statute. Now, that holding has been cited in two subsequent published cases by the Court of Appeals, and three unpublished cases. And so the only case that's saying that no, that's dicta, that's not something that we will follow, is the NER decision. And I would...
What difference does that make? If a petitioner or if a parent could amend a petition to add an voluntary, then you have both an involuntary and a voluntary. So it's amending to add it. Why does one supplant the other? What difference does your argument make?
Exactly, I was going to raise to the court. The difference, of course, is the effect that has on subsequent children.
Oh, I know the difference. Right. No, I understand the difference. But maybe I don't understand your argument. When you say the voluntary supplants the involuntary, I'm assuming you mean that the district court, once there's an amendment to add a voluntary petition for voluntary termination, that the district court should no longer consider involuntary termination?
Yes.
And why, if the case law that you're relying on talks about having the petitioner amend the petition to include voluntary, why would that necessarily eliminate the county's petition for involuntary?
I think it does that because that's what the case law says it does. In the, find that in my brief here.
Well, would you...
There are two. Go ahead.
Oh, you go ahead. I'll let you finish your answer, then I'll ask. Thank you.
It says that there are two procedures to convert a petition for involuntary termination into a voluntary petition. So by the act of converting, it's, and that language is used in all the cases that I've cited, that would mean that it's supplanting the involuntary termination or converting it and basically doing away with it.
Okay, so it's the word converting that you would argue would turn it only into voluntary. And then if the district court held a trial or hearing decided not to do a voluntary termination, then the county at that point would be your argument. The county then at that point could seek involuntary and would start again with a new petition?
Yes, it's an interesting question the court raises because as I cited again in my brief, several cases where the Court of Appeals or the appellate courts have talked about the fact that the basis for a grounds for involuntary termination of parental rights also exists for a grounds for a voluntary petition. I cited Justice Page, too, in his dissent in the case against a dissent, but still making the argument that those are the same types of grounds. And I was kind of getting into my next argument was about it's very arbitrary as to what district court judges are supposed to review in making a determination, or it seems it's too arbitrary for a district court judge just to say, well, in this case,
just a minute.
Same set of facts.
Sorry, before we move to the impact or what the court can consider in terms of future parental rights and that distinction, I guess I'd like you to respond to the characterization of the In Re Welfare of WLP as dicta.
Citing that to that case, saying we are following this as good law. So in other words, the Court of Appeals, this court has on its own chosen to adopt that as binding precedent in subsequent opinions. And so I would say that based on that, even if this court in one opinion, again, this is, just, and I don't mean to diminish Judge Hoodman and Judge Smith, your opinion in NAR, of course, but that opinion is the only case that I could find of six that said this is dicta, we're not going to follow.
And in the other cases, thank you. No, I appreciate that, and I want candor from you about our opinions, so no worries about that. What are the cases that, are there cases in which we, I assume it's we and not, we're not talking about the Supreme Court, but in that we decided based on a parent's amendment or request for voluntary termination that the district court could no longer consider an involuntary termination? What are the cases where we decided it supplanted it and could no longer be considered?
Or convert.
Converted it, yep.
That has not happened yet. And that's what I'm bringing forward to the court and asking the court to make that determination that going forward, because again, we're dealing with a bunch of unpublished case law and two cases that, again, you made the argument in the previous opinion that as DICA, the other courts have held, no, it's not, we're going to follow it, but it hasn't been clearly established that if you do that, that automatically converts it. That's just been arguments that people have been making, and that's been stated in there. And I think there's strong public policy reasons for doing that because, again, as we all know, whether it's an involuntary termination or a voluntary termination of parental rights is still terminated. And the best interest of the child is the paramount consideration in all child protection matters. But the argument is the best interest of the child at issue, not some future child down the road. Because again, we know that the reason why I'm here today is because my client has an involuntary when she wants a voluntary. Because at the time, as it stated in the record, she was pregnant. She did sign off on a voluntary TPR and onto that child she was pregnant with. But so it's somewhat moot. But for future cases, when a parent is, I think if a parent wants to preserve their rights to parent future children, they should not be subjected to an automatic strike or automatic, having the child ripped from their arms in the, in the hospital if there's no new grounds for termination. So in other words, if you've got a situation where a person has an involuntary termination at 18 or 19. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, though, I think you're reading too much into the
to the involuntary termination result. I mean, isn't that just a presumption that can be overcome by the parent?
In my review of the case law, Your Honor, that is an extremely difficult for them to overcome.
But if you have a parent that is so deserving after having lost children before, I mean, it's certainly a scheme that the legislature provided to the parent who had been involuntarily terminated to have a chance under certain circumstances to obtain custody and overcome the presumption.
Well, I'm going off of memory, Your Honor, so forgive me if I get my facts incorrect, but my recollection is that there's a couple cases that I reviewed in preparing for this case where before the district court, where a parent had been in treatment for a year or two afterwards and it had been clean, passed all the drug tests and everything, and the court still found, based on a history of drug use, that they were still palpably unfit. So there wasn't, I mean, the whole point of the termination statute in the case law says when you terminate parental rights, you have to do it for what exists at the time of the filing of the petition. And so now the legislature has created this presumption of palpable unfitness if you've got a prior involuntary termination. And I'm not suggesting that that's unconstitutional or we should do away with that. What I'm suggesting is when a parent wants to say, look, I acknowledge I can't parent this child right now. I've got drug addiction. I'm homeless. You've got whatever other malady that I can't take care of this child. So I'm going to file a petition to voluntarily relinquish it. That shows responsibility in part of the parent, I would argue. And it also gives that parent then a chance to get their life back together. And if they get their life back together, there should be a presumption that they are fit to parent their child.
Well, and that, I mean, doesn't the legislature allow for that? And I think there's case law that says that what that presumption does is basically change who has to produce the evidence. And it does put the burden on the parent to produce that evidence. And if the legislature came up with this scheme, doesn't that also mean that the legislature implicitly gave the court the opportunity to decide whether this should be a voluntary versus an involuntary termination?
Correct, but the rules of child protection do not, sorry, that's behind me, the rules of child protection procedure do not state, as your Honor said earlier, do not state what happens when you do file that voluntary petition. There's case law that suggests that you have competing, but then again, you also have the case law which I cited, which says it should be converted, which, i.e., supplants it. And so we're not clear. I mean, it's part of the thing what I'm asking for you to do is to clearly indicate to everybody what happens when an involuntary is filed and a voluntary gets filed afterwards. Is that converted, like the published case law says it does? We mean what we say. Or is that, as you're saying, DIPCA, and it's just two competing petitions, and it's up for the district court then to make a determination. But again, getting into my next argument a little bit, because I see I only have 2 minutes left, we're looking at when you have case law that says that a set of given facts in one case that justify a voluntary termination can also justify involuntary termination, that makes it way too arbitrary for a district court judge, I submit. There's not a clear line for a judge, because a judge could have, I don't want to say it's a personal bias, because you obviously, I know at least one of your honors was a district court judge for a while, and so you kind of get a feel for a case, you get a feel for a parent who's complying, who's not complying with the case plan, who's maybe deserving of another shot down the road versus who's somebody that should have to overcome the heavy burden. But still, when the cases I presented in my brief, the same exact situation as my client, where they voluntarily terminated because they had a drug problem, they were complying with the case plan, but had a lapse. And in those cases, the district court judge and the court of appeals said, yeah, that's grounds for a voluntary termination. Well, then why can't my client have a similar chance? And again, since the only distinction here, there's an unpublished case that I cited, In Re Welfare of LH, which indicates that we're not supposed to even be considering what happens to future children. Because again, as I stated earlier, and as the court's aware, The best interest of the child in a child protection case deals with the child that we're in the petition, as subject to the petition, not to some child that may or may not come down the road. And so in LH, it says you can't consider. Now, again, it's unpublished, but I think that's very good law, because we're not supposed to be considering the results of what happens to a TPR. We're only supposed to be looking at what happens to the children at issue. And if the parent's saying, I can't take care of this child, I agree that our rights should be terminated, then where's the state's interest? The state's interests are having termination occur. And that to the, that child or children, it doesn't make a difference to the state. The state doesn't have an interest in future children born or unborn.
Well, is there anything in the statutes or in the rules of juvenile protection procedure that refer to conversion of an involuntary termination action into a voluntary action?
No, and that's exactly the point, Your Honor. And that's why we have conflicting case law here. And I, again, would submit that the published law says convert. And that word has a specific meaning. It's not ambiguous. And I believe that was the intention of this court to use that word. It didn't say compete, you know, and again, it didn't talk about competing petitions. It didn't talk about, I'm gibberish here. It says convert. I believe that means it does away with the involuntary, and you're only supposed to go forward with the voluntary petition.
Do you have another question?
I do.
Oh, go ahead.
You know, I just want to talk about the district court's issue regarding good cause, and I thought that was a little, because usually good cause is, a district court isn't going to take or allow a parent to terminate their parental rights voluntarily unless there's sufficient reason to do so. And I thought it was kind of interesting, and usually the judges grant them because, especially if you've got an involuntary termination petition that's being filed at the same time and the judge is familiar, they're going to always allow, or almost always allow, the termination. But, I mean, isn't good cause here is whether there's sufficient basis for a parent? And I've had a few parents, believe it or not, that were, for no good reason other than they're sick of their kids, want to terminate, and it's not, fortunately, it's not very frequently, but and the judge has to assess whether there's good cause in that situation. I mean, wasn't this kind of a misuse of the good cause analysis here by the district court? It seems a little inconsistent in light of the fact that she did find there's sufficient basis for the termination involuntarily.
If I'm understanding the court's, your Honor's question,
right,
that you're asking, in essence, is you're asking me a question that may be favorable to my client's position, I would say yes. But I believe that was an abuse. That's why I cited the fact that she referred to what would happen to a future child because of the welfare of all age. We're not supposed to be considering, district court judges, they're not supposed to be considering future children. We're only supposed to be looking at the child or children that are issued here. And this, my client was a longtime drug addict, and she was in treatment. She was complying with the case plan, but she lapsed, and she realized that she is not going to prevail at a termination of parental rights. The law is very strongly against her, so she realized that it was in the best interest of her children for termination to occur, and so she decided to do it voluntarily because why go through a trial? Why have to go through and try to fight something that she knows she is going to lose? And I think that that's a public policy issue that we should be considering when we talk about the issue of converting an involuntary to a voluntary upon the filing of a petition.
But maybe,
getting back to the,
could I just want to give you the other side of the story on the public policy. Should the social services, which are already overextended, have to reinvent the wheel every time your client decides to have a baby when there's this history that clearly supports, clearly and convincingly, according to the judge, supports the fact that she's palpably unfit to parent?
Can I answer that question, Your Honor?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think the answer to that question, Your Honor, is how strongly do we value the parent-child relationship? And if we value that as really one of our sacrosanct rights as a human being, as a parent to procreate and parent the child that we have until or unless we are proved unfit to raise that child, then we should really be looking at the an automatic finding of fallible unfitness very circumspectly. And it should be only really, I'm not saying do away with it, but I'm saying we really should only be using it when it's an extreme type of a case. If a parent has been able to demonstrate sobriety, because you're catching on this kid, and again, I know it's a constitutional issue on this, but you're catching a situation, like I said, I was saying earlier, you have an 18-year-old mother who's got lots of problems, and she has an involuntary termination, or 20-year-old. Now she's 30, she gets married, she's responsible, she has whatever, she still now has to go back, and she has to prove that she no longer, or that she's able to raise this child. Why is that her burden to do? I think it's like a criminal case, you know? The criminal case is always the state's job to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that someone's guilty before we take away their liberty. Here, there should not be an automatic taking away of somebody's liberty unless they can defend themselves. And I think in this case, when you have a petition that's filed, converting it from involuntary to voluntary, I think that's what this court should rule. I greatly appreciate your questions.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted. We'll have the decision out in a statutory time period. Thank you.
Thank you, Stay warm.
Okay, and we're in recess.